I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting tonight, which has been organised by Platform for Change, which I have the privilege to chair. We are a cross-party pressure group for reform. You'll find more about us if you don't already on our Platform for Change website at platformforchange.net. It's really pleasing to see so many of you here tonight for the meeting. And also, we're very pleased to have such a large panel, which has been extending as the days have gone past. A very comprehensive panel, and I'm going to introduce them one by one. Starting on the far left, and then I'll position myself there, Chris Little, MLA from Alliance. Next to Chris is Claire Hannah, Belfast City Councillor for the SDLP. Next to Claire is Stephen Ivey, the leader of the Green Party and the MLA. Next to Stephen is Christopher Salford, Councillor of the EUP. Next to him is John Kyle, another Belfast City Councillor. And next to John, if you don't recognise him because of his new beard, it's Trevor Ringland, former Liberal International, but in this case, wearing his Conservative Party hat. I don't know whether the beard's coming up or not, but... next to Trevor is Gerard O'Neill, a City Councillor for Sinn Féin. And then next to Gerard is Rebecca Hall from the Labour Party. John McAllister, who was until very recently indeed in the Ulster Unionist Party, is due to join us and will be here hopefully in the next few minutes. But I'd like to get underway since you're all here, and we'll just bring John in when he arrives. Obviously, we're here to discuss the flags controversy. I hope we have a constructive discussion about the issues. What we're going to do is to ask all our panelists to make a short statement. And I have stressed the word short to them. They only have up to 6 to 5 minutes before I give them the dreaded head of the and that's because, of course, we want to put the emphasis on discussion and your questions afterwards. So without further ado, again, let's thank all our panelists coming. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And I'm going to get underway, and I'm just literally going to start from the left and go to the right in terms of the opening statements and ask Chris Little if he would like to begin. These microphones should be good enough for the general discussion, but if you want, you may want to take this one when you're doing your first presentation.
That's okay. People hear me from this though?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah. No problem. Okay, Robin, thanks. I'd like to thank Platform for Change for the invitation to be here tonight. I think the misrepresentation around this particular issue has been particularly extreme, and I do hope that this can be a constructive discussion this evening. I'll try to keep my comments as balanced and factual as possible. I'm acutely aware that the majority of people at this stage want to see leadership and solutions in relation to this issue. And I look at the City Hall Union flag issue in and of itself and also as a symptom of a wider issue of an incomplete peace process and lack of a regional shared future strategy in Northern Ireland. The issue of equality and good relations impact of the display of the Union flag at City Hall 24/7, 365, as my understanding, has been under consideration for around nearly 10 years. So it's not just about the votes of particular parties at City Hall or petitions, but it also includes senior legal advice, which stated that City Council may well have a case to answer on the practice of permanent display and the designated days would be a more preferred option, as it was a balanced and respectful reflection of the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. It happens to be a long-standing position of the Alliance Party, and completely independent of any other political parties. It also is a finding that 44% of people surveyed in a recent poll believe that designated days is the best policy for the respectful display of flags in our community. So why all the furore then? Well, in my opinion, the failure of leadership extended well beyond the issue of timing in relation to the motion, and there are still questions to be answered by most parties. The party, Sinn Féin and the SDLP, brought forward the motion for full removal of Union flag from City Hall, and I think it would be useful to hear from those parties as to why they think that position would unite our community, never mind unite Ireland. The UUP and the PUP shunned the new turned long-standing party policies in favour of designated days, and for the avoidance of doubt, I'll read a short extract from UUP and PUP responses to the Flags Order 2000, because it's pretty stark, to be honest. The UUP, by accepting the legitimate expression of British identity through the flying of the flag on flag-flying days, the SDLP and Sinn Féin will be honouring their obligation in the Belfast Agreement to show sensitivity and promote mutual respect rather than division. Designating a maximum of 17 days out of 365 days in the year clearly indicates that while upholding the constitutional position of Northern Ireland, there is no intention of flaunting the Union flag. The PUP, the healing process which the Good Friday Agreement was meant to be, is seriously hampered by continued resurrection of divisive issues, especially if those issues are hyped to one's own constituency as make or break. Northern Ireland is an integral part of the UK as per the will of the people, and there's no requirement to all day, every day, ensure that that glaring fact is appreciated. We believe the Union flag should be flown on the same designated days as the rest of the UK. The DUP accepted designated days at Lisburn City Council since, I think, approximately 2006, and at Parliament Buildings Stormont for many years. So not only were there stark U-turns on these policies, there was also a targeted distribution of thousands of leaflets misrepresenting a shared future position of my party, using language such as, and I quote, "The Alliance Party are backing Sinn Féin and the SDLP position," which is not true, "that the flag should be ripped down on all but a few days," which is a disgrace. They also singularly targeted Naomi Long MP for contact in relation to this issue, and that was the start of a systemic campaign of misrepresentation and intimidation that continues to this day. It wasn't about principle or policy, it was politically motivated. It was about creating political platforms for failing and failed politicians built on lies. Some of those lies were MLA don't care and are disengaged with working class communities. I won't dispute that there's a need for improved engagement, and I like to think most of my opponents would support the fact that I've been working on that issue. There's the lie that the Alliance Party is anti-British and anti-identity. One of our councillors attacked in relation to this issue is an RAF wing commander with more Britishness in his big toe than a lot of other people involved in this issue. It's perpetuated a narrative that cultural erosion is undergoing, and even the UK Secretary of State for Northern Ireland has dismissed this. It should have been a positive year for Britishness, the Jubilee, streets decked with the Union flag across Northern Ireland, the Olympics, the Covenant Parade. So in addition to that, I think we've come a long way also, despite that negativity. With 90% of people in surveys say they want children to be educated together, they want mixed neighbourhoods, and I'm proud that East Belfast sent the first cross-community MP to Westminster, recognised by many as a credit to Northern Ireland. So what is this about then? For me, at its very worst, it's about re-sectarianising Northern Ireland. And you can encourage people to vote for you one of two ways. You can either through fear or through inspiration. And I think this is purely about the morally bankrupt politics of fear. My biggest anger in this is that people who deserve honest and hard-working representation from elected representatives like myself are being misled. And I want to reach out to those people with the politics of inspiration and to reassure them. I'm willing and capable of engaging with the legitimate concerns of anyone. I don't dispute there are legitimate concerns, but I believe that inequality and those issues can only be addressed through a shared future. That to me is a balanced and positive expression of identity. It's a sustainable peace that will lift communities out of disadvantage and through regeneration and economic growth. I believe that designated days is a long-term policy solution, and 2 years after CSI draft, 1 year after a closed OFM-DFM working group in relation to the issue, the Alliance Party has published our document for everyone at the finish, and we put a constructive suggestion that there should be a shared future reference group. I think that's the place where we'll deal with some of these long-term issues and build sustainable peace in Northern Ireland.
Thanks, Chris. I'm sorry to cut everybody off, but obviously of the opportunities for everybody to come back in the discussion. Claire, you're next. Graham, that's the update.
Okay, with that in mind, I'll cut out large parts of mine through the script on the time. I'm probably not alone in this, but I'm not one of these people whose heart swells with an anthem or a flag or any of those things. I'm probably cold to the point of indifference on most symbols and expressions of a national identity, and I think that's what we're talking about tonight, wider issues of identity in terms of, you know, the trouble and the flare-up that we had for a couple of months. If it hadn't been the vote in December, that was going to happen probably one way or the other, and some war drums have been banging on that issue for quite a long time in terms of disquiet over historical inquiries and some of the kind of less savoury murals that have been appearing, and even as far back as the riots in Easton the previous June. But I think quite clearly the trouble that we've had for the last couple of months in the discussion does, as Chris said, reflect the fact that we haven't addressed a lot of the challenges that were set out for us over 15 years ago around identity and shared future and dealing with the past, and all the meeting the Queen and attending GA and up at the matches and all that can't cover up for the lack of a comprehensive cohesion sharing and integration strategy. To my mind, flags here have always been used as a tool to divide and incite and dominate, and generally as a kind of a coat-trailing mechanism in another one of these sham fights that unfortunately we do seem to fall for a lot of the time. And while you may have your own views on their choice to designate as nationalist, I'm proud of the fact that the SDLP has never used national flags. And if you look back 40 years, I think the founders of the SDLP were thoughtful and had foresight in avoiding trigger words like Irish and nationalist and choosing to form a Social Democratic and Labour Party. In terms of my own politics, I am genuinely fully committed to a shared future, and I've no bones about saying that it's ahead of achieving United Ireland in my personal and political priorities. And I think building reconciliation here, getting out of the Alice in Wonderland that is our economy and all of those things, are an absolute prerequisite before we can begin to talk about how and if we unify the island. That said, I want to be very clear that I don't think it's sectarian to be a nationalist or to be a unionist any more than it is racist to be Welsh or to be Spanish or any of those things. And I know here in particular, and probably throughout the world, nationalism manifests in generally very only ways. And I think as a philosophy and a political ideology, it is generally negative. And in terms of my own, I kind of think of things like the Olympics and the positive feeling around that in GB linked up with the flag, the type of stuff that, say, Miliband is pushing in the One Nation Labour thing, which is more about social solidarity. So I think there are positive manifestations of nationalism. It isn't always the ugly word that it seems to be here. And I do think the perception that to be progressive and to move forward here, you have to surrender any view on the national question is flawed. And I think there's a danger that people are a wee bit alienated to be told that they may have a sectarian vote if they vote for a party that does have an issue or have a kind of a view on it. I mean, I think I'm like a lot of SDLP voters, you know, somewhere I do have an aspiration to United Ireland, but I fully accept our place in the United Kingdom. I fully accept the rational mechanic that we all agreed in 1998 to decide the constitutional future of Northern Ireland. I have absolutely no ill will towards neighbours of another political philosophy, but the Good Friday Agreement does enshrine the right to hold and aspire to an identity other than a British identity. Background on the flags issue, because I think it's appropriate that we clarify some of the chronology. The EQIA, I think, was sort of the ball rolling, certainly at the start of the most recent mandate, certainly just after I was elected. And I have to say, while anyone who knows me, I don't have much affection for Sinn Féin, and while it's not an issue I would have pushed, it's never one that's been raised in the door with me, flags. But, you know, people are entitled to take democratic moves towards any policy that they have in their manifesto, and I don't think we should imply that it was actually a democratic decision and the motion that went through Belfast City Council that sparked off the trouble, because as I say, I think that trouble was brewing anyway. My party's long-standing and I think reasonable and legitimate policy is for no flag. You know, we are unfortunately a city of minorities, it's relatively divided, and in the absence of a flag that represents us all, I think no flag is still the closest we can have to a neutral environment. That said, just to clarify, to come up in the Policy and Resources Committee, I was there when the initial motion for no flag was proposed, and I did. I voted for no flag, knowing that I was going to vote for designated days in full council a couple of days later. And I've gone back over that in my mind. Politics is the art of compromise. If I never see another flag of any colour, it'll be soon enough for me. I don't want to see any flags, and I think, you know, the debate is wider about identity. I don't know if you've been in City Hall, but it is. I mean, it's full of kind of paraphernalia, not just religious, militarist of an empire long gone. And I think, you know, that doesn't make me angry or hostile, but I do think we have to look at symbolism in the wider context. So I still think it was a legitimate and a reasoned policy to have a view on no flags, but it wasn't a compromise that I had very much difficulty in making. And I think we all need to step out of our comfort zone in terms of political parties to resolve the issue, because the last thing we need is 11 new councils going into their first, and bear in mind these councils have been designed to have take ons and problems and Belfast in the middle. The last thing we need is 11 councils having ding-dongs on flags and emblems for their first few meetings. So I do think we have to kind of work quite hard and find a compromise that can fit across Northern Ireland in the next few months and year.
Great, thanks, Claire. And conscious that there are quite a few people attending this meeting are not actually either British or Irish, they might like to know that an EQIA is an Equality and Impact Assessment, and the reference to Protestants today is Protestants and Catholics. Stephen Agnew next, please, from the Greens.
Thank you very much, Robin. The Green Party, through its politics, has sought to move Northern Irish politics away from the politics of identity towards the politics of ideas. We hear a lot of parties saying that we should put the economy first, but I actually don't think in many regards they've lived up to that, as we've seen over how the issue of flags has been dealt with. The Green Party has consistently stuck to what commonly called bread and butter issues. I don't love the term, but it serves a purpose. You know, more generally, we believe it should be more balanced across economic, social, and environmental policies, but, you know, we believe they should be at their core. We do sincerely regret that I have to be here talking about flags. I mean, as a party, we can't not address the issue. It's the issue of the day, and we're not going to walk away from it either, but we regret that this is going back to being top of the agenda. Identity is important, there's no doubt about it, and they always say the Green Party is puts as much value in cultural diversity as we do in biodiversity. You know, it's who we are, it's how we define ourselves, it's how we see ourselves. But I don't think diversity should be something that divides our society. I don't think our different cultural identities should divide our society as a party. Indeed, we people from all sorts of different backgrounds, Protestant, Catholic, nationalist, unionist, certainly cultural backgrounds, British, Irish, and it doesn't divide our party. And I don't see it as something that should divide our society. And I do believe we need to move towards that position of mutual respect. I mean, for a long time I retreated from considering myself either British or Irish, because so much negativity being going around. It's been made the point with the flag protest, you know, people wrapping themselves around the flag and using it as a weapon. Does nothing to make me want to identify with that aspect of my own identity. But I do, I think living in Northern Ireland, you inevitably have both British and Irish identity making up who you are, and indeed European. But I probably would be one of those growing number of people who consider themselves Northern Irish first and foremost. But for me, the aspect of my Britishness that I'm most proud of is things like the National Health Service, our social welfare system, free education for all, freedom of speech, which is something that's actually come under attack, and I've said this previously, including the Assembly Chamber. For the first time, I felt my freedom of speech was under attack, because I had two colleagues from the Alliance Party whose house was attacked up the road for something actually that Michael Barr didn't say, but was believed to have said. And that concerns, because that's something fundamental about Britishness that I hold dear. Equally, our democracy, you know, again, it's fundamental to when we talk about Britishness, I think that's a fundamental part of what it means to be British. So to certainly protest the decision, that's fine, but to then move that step further towards violence and intimidation, I think is an attack on democracy and indeed an attack on a fundamental part of Britishness. I think it's regrettable that the Good Friday Agreement has been to some extent reduced to a sum of win and loss. For me, the Good Friday Agreement was something where we all won, because I remember praying that my mum would come home from Belfast, where she worked, alive and well, because as a child I'd day where I feel she wouldn't come home, and thankfully most people don't have that concern. Equally, we don't have to have our bags searched when we go into shops, we don't have to walk past armed soldiers as we walk through Belfast city centre, so there's been victories. But I do accept that there are problems of social deprivation and poverty that the Good Friday Agreement hasn't solved, and maybe the promise was too great. And I think we're now at a stage where, as politicians, we're talking about major reforms of the Good Friday Agreement. And the one thing I remember, so I was 18 at the time of the Good Friday Agreement referendum, and it was my first ever vote, and we were told it was the People's Agreement.
That's in the last 3 years.
Okay, it was my first ever vote, and it was the first time my family sat around a table discussing politics, and we were told it was the People's Agreement. And now politicians are talking about changing it. And I think that's right, we should update it, we should amend it, but we need to start going back to the people, and I think we need to engage in a civic conversation where we bring communities back into the discussion, because if the mistake of the Good Friday Agreement was to left some people behind, well, let's not make the same mistake twice. In fact, let's not compound it by changing something that was democratically voted on and not going back to the people they asked their views. And as we talk about changing the assembly structures, and if the issue of flags needs to be addressed, let's do it through community engagement, through civic conversation, and change it, but change it with the People's Agreement.
Thanks, Stephen. And let's just from the DUP, Christopher.
Thank you very much. Robin, thank you for inviting me along to speak this evening. I think it's probably worth giving people a bit of background as to how they ended up at this juncture. The decision to proceed within a quality impact assessment was taken as a consequence of nationalist political agitation, specifically from Sinn Féin. Nine days, I think it was, into the council term that has just commenced, Sinn Féin and the SDLP went into the council officers and made it clear that they wanted to pursue an equality impact assessment to discuss the issue of the flag of the flag at the City Hall, the Ulster Hall, and Dunkrough Street. Their top priority was not the economy, was not putting together the investment package. For the 9 days of receiving a mandate, that was what they were seeking to pursue through the council structures. I think that indicates they had the wrong priorities. But I think it's important to state very clearly where this debate was commenced. It was not commenced by any of the actions of the unionist political parties in the City Hall, either the DUP, the Ulster Unionist Party, or the PUT. So this debate arose as a consequence of political agitation from the nationalist parties. The responses to the public consultation that the council held indicated very clearly that there was no real appetite for this change. The public, a large number of people, didn't even know that there was a flag on the City Hall. And of those who did, the majority indicated that they had no particular issue with it. So this is an unneeded distraction from the work of the council. The motivation for it, I think, was base, and I think it was point scoring, and it was about sending out a message, particularly to the unionist community in Belfast, that we are the masters now, we control the city. We are in charge, and there's nothing you can do about it. And whenever you say this, usually to nationalist political representatives, you get a sort of all our yesterdays about the evils of discrimination that were done in the past. Let me tell you something, folks. I was born in 1983. I never discriminated against anybody, and I refuse to be made to pay for whatever mistakes happened in the past. It's not my responsibility. I wasn't responsible for what went on in the past, and neither I nor the community that I represent should be made to pay for that. So I think it was a negative step that the council took. I do think it's important to recognise, Claire has said, and Claire is right, the council was within its rights to take the decision that it did, and people were within their rights to lobby for it. And that's absolutely the case, and I don't dispute that. Personally, I think that it was an unnecessary distraction. I think it's important to respond to some of what has been said. The DUP and the Ulster Unionists jointly engaged over a course of several months inside the council with other parties. It was not our intention at any point to go public on this issue. We went public on this issue when it became clear that internally sort of lobbying parties in the council, some of the parties in the council, would not produce an outcome. So we therefore went public with the issue and we made people aware of what was going on. And had I not made the people that I represent aware of the issue and aware of what was going on, I would have been failing in my duty as an elected representative. And in a democracy, people have an absolute right to make their views known and to lobby political parties. I'm phoned every day of the week by my constituents about issues from planning to rubbish collection, all sorts of issues. So lobbying a political party is perfectly legitimate. What is not legitimate is the use of violence. That's totally wrong. Of course it is. But to lobby a political party, especially a political party that makes much of their balance holding capacity in the City Hall, I think is perfectly legitimate. I would want to just comment on one thing that Claire Hannah said. I thought it was very revealing. She said, "I voted for No Flag knowing that I would vote for designated deaths." Now, if the SDLP and Sinn Féin knew they were going to, and we'll hear from Sinn Féin later on, but we have an admission from the SDLP that they voted for No Flag at the committee meeting, knowing that they were going to vote for designated deaths at the council. I put it to Jim McVeigh, the leader of the Sinn Féin group, when I was in a TV studio with him before the vote at the council on this issue, that he was going to vote for designated deaths, and subsequently he did. So the idea that the Alliance backed the Sinn Féin and the SDLP position is entirely true, because that's exactly what happened.
Is it legitimate to distribute
false
information?
That's absolutely true.
Come back on that. All right. Thank you.